This is Radio MD COVID-19 Daily, your source for COVID-19 news from the front lines of healthcare. I'm Caitlin White. We've made it through another week of quarantine. It's Friday, April 24th. After the news, we'll hear an interview on how to be outside safer when you're trying to get some fresh air in. And our healthcare heroes today are two medical school students who are helping coordinate babysitting shifts for healthcare workers looking for childcare. With all of the uncertainty in the world today, people are looking for comfort wherever they can find it. For some, that's returning to old TV shows. Radio MD's Scott Webb has more on a return to classic television.
Americans aren't just turning to comfort foods during COVID-19. We are also turning to comforting music, movies, and TV shows. According to a new Nielsen study conducted with Billboard and MRC data, more than half of consumers are seeking comfort in familiar music and television shows. 87% of respondents reported listening to the same music they normally listen to, and 54% said they'd recently rewatched episodes of an old favorite TV show. With a third of Americans working from home, according to the study, 60% report spending more time on entertainment, and nearly 80% said they've added a new streaming service, such as Netflix or Hulu. Reporting for Radio MD News, I'm Scott Webb.
Ah, yes, the dreaded home haircut. I could use a trim, but I'm trying to hold out for a professional. But Radio MD's Bill Klaproth has a few tips for those who are brave enough to take scissors to their own hair.
So first off, do you really need a haircut? Have you seen the videos of people trying to cut their own hair? Yeah, not good. But if letting it grow out is not an option, here's some tips. Make sure you have quality scissors. The beat-up kitchen scissors won't work. And if you can find hair clippers online, remember, clippers are for short hair. Then if you can, have someone help. Start small, you can always cut more, and cut horizontally to remove length, then vertical snips to thin out the ends. And lastly, be conservative. This is likely your first time, so trim your hair. Don't try to restyle it entirely. Or you can be like me, no trimming or cutting at all. I'm going for the full-on slash from Guns N' Roses look. Welcome to the jungle, indeed. For Radio MD News, I'm Bill Klaproth.
And some heartwarming news. When Elizabeth Carpenter's husband died in 2017 in a motorcycle accident, she couldn't bear to give up his uniforms. Bill Carpenter was an officer at the Albion Correctional Facility in Western New York for about 10 years, and Elizabeth held 8 of his uniforms dear. That is until recently when she found a better use for them. She began sewing masks. Carpenter can make 14 masks from one shirt. She is also a quilter, so between the shirts and the extra fabric she had around, she's made 200 masks for her community. Well, I just moved to a new city and was so excited to be a few blocks away from a big popular park. But now I avoid that space at all costs when I take a walk because it's always filled with people and they don't exactly look like they're trying very hard to social distance. With us today with some tips on staying safe when you just want to be outside is Dr. Lee Vanocur, board-certified emergency physician and spokesperson for the American College of Emergency Physicians.
If somebody aerosolizes while they're talking and it can be carried on air currents, I used to tell people and patients, well, you know, if you're out in your neighborhood by yourself and you're walking your dog and you don't see anybody, it's probably okay to be out there without a mask and such. But if you're going to a park, and now I have to say it's the funniest thing because, you know, I commented to my husband, I used to walk my dog every day in the neighborhood. I hardly saw anyone because I live in a little bit rurally suburb. Now I see people that live in my neighborhood I've never seen before. I see dogs I've never seen before. I'm like, how are these dogs getting exercise before? Because suddenly everybody's there. And I've been getting a few texts from neighbors saying, hey, who's up for a walk? Well, guess what? I don't want to walk with 6 people taking a walk. And I do also see groups of people walking with their strollers now and talking. And I'm thinking to myself, you know, some of them aren't even 6 feet apart. So yeah, that's what I think if we really want to be strict about this, these are the things we have to think about. And that's why I know in Maryland, our Governor Hogan's doing a great job. He unfortunately had to shut down a lot of parks and close them and have police patrolling because if it's potential to aerosolize, it makes that risk much bigger. And I have to say, early on when there was the big mask debate and we were talking about China, during regular cold and flu season in Asia, it was expected anyone that was ill, because it, you know, think about China and how many people live there and how congested it is, you had to wear a mask. And I read an article that said to destigmatize, like, who was sick and who not was sick, it was required that everybody wore a mask. And this is just during regular cold and flu season. Now, a lot of these draconian measures, this is the big issue that we face as Americans, right? Americans relish our freedom, and we do not take well to having people tell us how to live our lives. But this is the big conundrum with public health and your individual freedoms and rights, right? Where is that line in America? And people have a lot of distaste for some of the measures that China did. Even today, I see videos of people congregating, you know, even in downtown Baltimore where I am. I mean, you know, public health is for the health of the public. And sometimes you have to sacrifice individual rights to ensure real public health measures. So, you know, there were always issues out there with resistant tuberculosis and, you know, where do you draw the line if someone refuses to take their medicine, and public health officials having the right to quarantine and arrest people even way back when there was, you know, before there was a pandemic. So the problem is, in a pandemic, our public health system is just not subsidized well enough to have the manpower to really carry out some of the stuff that we have seen has been successful in places like South Korea. They learned from SARS. They admitted that SARS, there were some issues when it first came out, but they immediately started testing hundreds of people, did contact tracing of infected people. I mean, we don't even have the manpower to do that, and that's part of the problem. And I hope that this is fundamentally going to change our healthcare system. And then when the time comes to decide, you know, this is critical to the health of our country, that, you know, emergency physicians will be there at the table to talk about, hey, we've been warning about our surge capacity problems in hospitals and in ERs for 20 years. And this is why. And I think that this is going to change our public health system and our emergency medical health system.
Now, I keep seeing people online trying to find loopholes to social distancing. Like, oh, we'll go for a walk and stay far apart. Or I can have a few beers in my friend's driveway from 6 feet away. Are those effective or still defeat the purpose?
Right. And the truth of the matter is, as we discussed before, so the 6 feet distance is related to respiratory droplet spreading, right? That if you're 6 feet away and somebody coughs or sneezes, the respiratory droplets are going to fall to the ground before they can reach you. If we really are concerned about how much of the virus can be aerosolized, and aerosolization is a bigger issue, you know, in healthcare systems, I don't want to completely freak people out, where, you know, you have doctors or ER doctors at the head of the patient or anesthesiologists, like 6 inches from their face, putting in a tube to intubate them, you're really close contact. But by the same token, if there are enough gathered that may be sick, and there may be a time to talk about asymptomatic spreaders and carriers, right? So if you're in a group that's just 6 feet away, but we know it can be carried, and you're sitting outside and it's windy, or you have a fire, you know, hopefully maybe if the aerosol hits the bonfire, that could kill the virus technically. But it depends which way the wind's blowing, right? And whose aerosolized virus is going into the fire and whose isn't. So I think it's tough. This is a really tough time for everybody. I do feel bad for people that are living by themselves and isolated, reaching out to friends and family by phone and FaceTime, and that is just critical. But I think we should not try and get around it. We're learning so much more about this virus as time goes on. All of this data is being uploaded now. It's kind of universal. It's amazing. You know, I'm seeing so much data being put out there just to say, hey, it hasn't been completely peer reviewed. You don't have to belong to this journal. We just want to get this out so that people can start to work with stuff. So doctors, all different types of doctors, are trying and racing to learn more about it, virologists, epidemiologists. And I think people, I've had so many people express to me, I feel hopeless, I feel helpless, what can I do? And just knowing that you're doing this and this is a sacrifice for you should make you feel good, like you're doing something and you're helping people. So, you know, I think masks, minimal trips to the grocery store, outside, if you can't help it and you live in a place like a city and walking your dog, you're going to pass people, put the mask on while you walk your dog.
Well, Lee, thanks so much for stopping by and dropping some information off for us. I'll be sure to mask up when I go for my daily walks. A big obstacle for healthcare workers who are still needed at work is childcare, now that most schools and daycares around the country are closed. In today's Healthcare Heroes Highlight, we go down to Florida, where University of Florida medical students Emily Edwards and Christine Rodhouse are offering services to UF staff to help with childcare and household chores. Emily, tell us how Gator Sitters got started.
So I had talked to one of my mentors, Dr. Jennifer Kovu. She's one of the pediatric cardiologists prior to us even coming off of clinical rotations. And we had seen an article about some students in Minnesota that had also started up a babysitting service because they saw that there's a huge need for their healthcare workers. And she told me, you know, if you guys want to do this, let me know. I'm happy to help disseminate information. And then I eventually talked to Dr. Duff, one of the deans of student affairs at UFCom, and told him about this idea. And it just sort of developed from there. We'd had another student, Stacy Kirkpatrick, who I think had worked with Dr. Harrell and gotten just like a list of students that were willing to volunteer and help out with a variety of things from childcare and pet care to like telemedicine visits. But as we were thinking about it, I realized that we probably need to be a little bit more careful about how we match up the physicians or other healthcare workers at UF with students so that they're not all using the same small group of students and having a lot of like cross-contamination. And so I thought maybe having this website and some people that served as coordinators between the two groups would give us some benefit, and that we could track exposures and try to minimize the risk that everyone is subject to with this.
So Christine, from my understanding, you all are still in school doing online classes. How are you balancing all this extra work now with childcare on top of it?
Yeah, so that's been a process as well. A lot of us are doing online classes, and so it's kind of, you can prioritize your time. And then we've been having, luckily Emily and I are in the same clerkship right now. And so we've been doing study groups together and then also doing some Gator Sitters business on top of that. So it's just kind of trying to figure out how to balance both doing our classwork and coordinating all of the babysitting. At this point, us coordinators, besides one of our other coordinators, Emily Pregman, we haven't done any childcare just because we're trying to make sure we can keep things organized and manage our volunteers. But we definitely probably will at some point. Like I know Emily is going to help out with a family next week. But yeah, it's all just kind of trying to figure out how to prioritize your time and make sure you're still putting in enough time to study and do your schoolwork.
Absolutely. Emily, how has the response been from staff? Are a lot of people taking you up on this offer?
I think the right number of people are taking us up on this offer at the time, because we don't have a huge volunteer group. It's a fairly small base still, and it's just the three of us coordinating all of this. And it's a lot of the requests that we're getting are for multiple days and span as long as, you know, up to 2 months worth of days. And so that's been a little tricky trying to coordinate for more than two or three people at a time. So we've responded to about, I would say, anywhere from 3 to 6 family requests per week, but some of them may extend farther out than just 1 week.
And Christine, why help in this way? You know, such a hands-on approach. Why did you go the childcare route?
I just wanted to find something I could do to help. We're still doing our classwork and all that, but especially as third years, really feel sidelined because we were working in the hospitals before all of this, and now we're at home. And so I was really grateful when Emily reached out to me and asked if I wanted to help her do the coordination for this, because I just wanted to be able to help in some way. I know a lot of students are doing the swabbing and all of that stuff. And it's just, we all want to be able to help in our own way. And I thought this was a great opportunity.
Great. Is there anything else you want to add? Maybe to other, you know, college grad students that want to get involved in their own communities?
I think, like Emily said, I'm sure there's a need in every community for childcare, especially with healthcare workers. But I think it is really important the way we've kind of set it up and have someone coordinate it so that you can keep track of exposures and making sure that there aren't too many volunteers working with a family at a time and that kind of stuff. But I think it's definitely, there's a huge need for this, and I would encourage anyone to go ahead and organize this.
Yeah, I think this just gives us a sense of appreciation for all that our healthcare workers are doing. I mean, a lot of them are working extra hours and putting themselves at increased risk, you know, working directly with patients that have COVID-19. And so whenever we get to help out one of those families, it just feels like very gratifying to know that in some small way, we made their lives just a tiny bit easier when there's so much uncertainty and so much stress going on.
Yeah, definitely. Even we helped someone get groceries the other day, and it was just, that was something different than the childcare, and it was just really cool to be able to help out in any way that we could.
This has been Radio MD's COVID-19 Daily. If you want to reach out or know a healthcare hero near you, email us at COVID19daily@radiomd.com. That's COVID19daily@radiomd.com. We would also be so grateful if you could leave a review or a rating on Apple Podcasts to help us out. I hope you have a safe and soothing weekend, and we'll be right back here with you on Monday afternoon. I'm Caitlin White. Stay home and stay healthy.